This is Dialogue, a podcast series from American Mosaic. Just driving around the country, talking to people about roots, family, community, jobs, kids, whatever is on their mind today. This is a conversation I had in Stockton, California. I was part of my road trip in the San Joaquin Valley. I wanted to go to Stockton because I was aware of a lot of the problems that they had as a result of the Great Recession and speculation in real estate and so on. And I knew that there was a lot of people living kind of on the edge, struggling to get ahead, as well as the city itself. So I was walking around and stumbled into a place that I wasn't sure what was going on, and it looked like it was a place that was helping people, particularly youth. And I saw a display that caught my eye, and it was a lot of photographs of young people that actually had been killed in gang violence. And that's where I ran into Maurice and chatted with him a bit, and he agreed to have a conversation. It was an excellent conversation.
My name is Maurice Goins. We're in Stockton, California, at Fathers and Families of San Joaquin, which is a nonprofit organization that is on the front lines of helping the community.
Well, tell me a little bit about what brought you here. And I like, you know, your roots, and you said that you grew up in Compton.
Okay.
Tell me a little bit about your background.
I'm 43 years old. I was born in Compton, California back in 75. I was back and forth from Compton to San Jose, California. This is Northern California. Back and forth pretty much all my life. But if you ask me, I grew up in San Jose, East San Jose, to be specific. Due to the rent being sky high, $2,200 for a one-bedroom apartment in the so-called Bay Area, I moved to Sacramento in 99, had a two-bedroom apartment for $500, so that was pretty good. It's unheard of now. I'm in Sacramento, but all my life I've worked for different programs. I worked for the city of San Jose. I did gang intervention, worked directly with at-risk youth. I worked at the Job Corps. I have over 20 years experience of working with youth and at-risk youth and trying to, you know, I have a background in gangs myself and criminal activity when I was younger. So I do my part so that when I see a youth or somebody that I see myself in, I can say, hey, I went that route. You don't have to go that route. This is a better way that you can go. So I stop them and I try to school them, give them some game, and try to show a better way and a positive path that they can go on besides going on a negative road. So that's what I do, which brought me to Fathers and Families. February 2017, I started off as a manager of the youth program here, and we did a lot of great work. Hova Noble program, we had about consistently every week about 15 to 20 youth that we set through a curriculum, just teaching self-worth, manhood training. We had young women in there too, so we're not going to be gender specific, but just uplifting positivity that'll help them make their way in the community. Now, my position here as Fathers and Families, I work for the AB 109 pilot program for reentry. People that's coming out of the county jails, people coming out of incarceration. I have a certain amount of monies allotted to me that I can help them overcome any obstacles that they may have while being on probation. So if they need an ID, I can go pay for the ID. If they need some work boots, I can pay for it so they can save their money. They need groceries for their family, I can do that. I help them write resumes. I do all that. So that's what I do now here at Fathers and Families of San Joaquin.
Good question. How did you break out of the cycle? How did you get out of the youth in the gangs? What was the turning point for you? What brought you out of there?
I think for me was even with my eye, I'm a product of a single parent home. My mother raised me. Just growing up, even in my darkest moments, my time on the streets, my activities, my negative activities, I've always had somebody in the neighborhood, and I tell this story a lot. There's always was an older person in my neighborhood where I grew up, even though when the guy I'm thinking about, he was selling drugs back in the 80s. He was dealing narcotics. But even in his era, in his behavior, he took time to come shoot basketball hoops with me. He would make sure I got something from the ice cream truck. So even though I knew what he was doing, I appreciated that. So when I grew up, when I became 16, 17, I seen the young people from my neighborhood. They knew I was involved with gangs. I'm doing that. But I would always stop and I'll go shoot a couple hoops with them. I'll make sure they have stuff from the ice cream truck or go to the candy house. That's hood stuff. Candy house. 1993, April 14, 1993, my cousin was murdered by the San Jose Police Department. I was 17 years old. I was in the car with him. They shot him 3 times in his back while he was running. I got charged with his murder. In California, and I think this is across the board in all the other states, but I know specifically in California, if you are in the commission of a felony and the police end up killing one of you, the other person can be charged with that murder. Even though the police did, I was charged with his murder at 17. The only way I didn't go to the youth authority, which is the juvenile prison, or to different other programs and be gone for 10, 15 years, is this happened around the time of the Rodney King riots. So it was a Caucasian, it was Mexican police, but it was a Mexican police officers. They killed a young black male who was only 20 years old. And they'd seen what happened in Los Angeles. So for them to take me and put me in the youth prison for 15 years, I don't think we would have been going for that. So I still did get some time, but now at 43 years old, and I was 17 then, my cousin, he's gone. I have 5 children now. When we grew up, we would always say that our children are going to play with each other and this and that, but he's not here. So I've taken it upon myself that it'll be my duty in my life to prevent that from happening to anybody else. So whatever I can do, whatever I can say, however I can assist and help some of the young people, even some of our older people that are acting young, this is a better way. And I want to use my life as an example and show through my experiences what I've been through the legal system, through seeing death on the streets here in California, and just all that. I want to try to be a beacon of light.
There's I don't know the numbers, but the population here in Stockton, mm-hmm. and I know in some of the other surrounding areas, I gather it's actually, if you the white population is really not that large. But you take a lot of the immigrants,
right?
You take all the people of color. You take how would you say that breaks out the total population?
You know, Stockton, me coming from Northern California, from the Bay Area, it's real diverse. I see it's a lot of diversity here in Stockton, but I see a lot of, reminds me of Chicago, it's real segregated. The white people are on one side, I think they call it Oakville. Oakville, and then you have a lot of Latino, Chicano, Hispanics right here, central Stockton. The north area, it's a lot of black people. The south area, a lot of black people. But for when I see everybody interacts. So the population and I think it depends on the generational wise. It's a generation gap. The younger people tend to stick together a little bit more, but people my age and a little bit older, and I'm saying my age, like I'm real old. But I know the older people, they kind of stick to themselves. But I know it's, from what I've seen in my time being here in Stockton, it's people know that those people live over here and those people live over here. Even though they interact, it's still kind of separate, in my opinion.
What do you think about some people would say we're in a new America, a changed America. It's a different time, perhaps, and we're not going back to maybe what do you think about that, the way things are going? Are we going forward? Are we going backwards? Or where are we going?
If you don't know your history, you're bound to repeat it. The Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad also said, he didn't say that first quote, but he did say, history best rewards our research. We can look through history and prove a point today. If you look at the history of America, which started off as a place where immigrants can come, Angel Island, on the East Coast, they can come and start a new life for themselves. But then some way, somehow, oppression started. People started being oppressed, and people started to divide themselves over colors and racial lines. So on that question, on has America changed? It's changed in some ways. In other ways, it stayed the same. I think it's a mindset that needs to change. It's a mindset that's been passed down from generationally that has to change. And I think the people that are being born in this last few generations are starting to change that mindset. So I'm hopeful. I'm optimistic. Speaking of it biblically, when Moses left Egypt, they were made to wander around the desert for 40 years until that old mindset died off. Because you had some with Moses that still didn't understand why they left Egypt, and they still wanted to be in Egypt with Pharaoh, even though they were being oppressed. So that mindset now is dying out, as we've seen in the 60s and 70s, in the 80s. Some of those people are gone, and you got new people. You have people that are world leaders and presidents that grew up on watching Michael Jordan play basketball, that grew up listening to hip-hop music. No other time in history have you had a president that's familiar with rappers and certain rock, you know, and the earliest president I remember is Carter, is Jimmy Carter. But now you had Obama, you had even Bush, you had Clinton, and they were kind of more in tune with what was going on. So I think there's some changes, but there's a lot of work that needs to be done for it to be truly an American mosaic in harmony and in unity.
Without saying anything that you don't want to say, mentioned some presidents. Would you have any speak to the current president or anything that's any views about the direction, what's going on today?
I think the current president, presidents aren't elected, they're selected. I think the current president is proving a point, is showing this nation and showing people that we need to be in unity with each other and work as one. Because it's easy for someone like that, of that caliber, to come in and start to divide. And even though he tries to take the back seat on a lot of issues and say, I'm not doing that, sometimes you not speaking up, speaking out, and speaking against something, then you're condoning it. You're condoning those guys with those TV torches. You're condoning that guy that ran those people over. You're condoning these police that's killing these people. I'm as a black man here in America, I get pulled over by the police for, you know, I ride around with bad tags and no insurance. I get pulled over by the police. I got to really stop and think. Maybe when I left the house, maybe that's the last time I'm going to see my children, because this might be it, depending on the mindset of that police officer. So when he comes, I'm moving slow. I'm saying, hey, I'm taking my left hand and I'm going to reach over here. I have the police, hey, you ain't got to talk like that. Why are you doing all that? Because I have a life. I have children, and I want to get back home to them. I don't want nothing, no sleight of hand. I don't want you to feel intimidated, so I'm going to go real slow. Each and every time I get pulled over for my windows being tinted, I might not come home that night. And that's a sad reality. So I'm very careful. And it's hurtful to even have to say that. That every time I get pulled over, my children pop in my head. Because that me saying, I'm going to 7-Eleven to go get your Slurpee, I'll be right back, I might not come back.
What do you... all love makes me think of guns.
Right.
We have so much conversation today about guns.
Right.
About violence and about the type of guns and so on and so forth. And we have the NRA.
Mm-hmm.
And we have all their money. And just from your perspective, any thoughts about guns in America today?
I think a real brutal and honest conversation needs to be had about firearms and guns. There's certain guns that are made for war machines to kill. You don't need a 50-round, 100-round, fully automatic turbine cartridge to shoot deer. What are you shooting? You're shooting at other people. It's crazy because you see different countries, and you see other places, the real low in gun violence and murders and whatnot. Then you come to this country and they want to sit there and they want to express that, well, it's the movies, it's the different influences and whatnot. They have the same movies over there. They have the Terminator and stuff over there. It's a mindset that's here. It's a mindset that's going on. The media, in my opinion, desensitizes people. When we hear somebody get murdered, we see murders now on YouTube. We see it on the internet. Now I don't care no more. I'm desensitized. Children play murders in the video game. They're real graphic. So now you have a desensitized. So when you have a young man or a young girl that has a gun and they shoot, it's fake to them. It's not real. They don't think about the after effects until they're sitting in that cell. That's what I think.
A number of years ago, I go like, what's happening? Why is this happening? So we'll follow the money and you figure it out. Sooner or later, I mean, you know, you'll go like, well, that's why this happened.
Did you hear the expression when they talk about the troops? When the troops... they're saying they're fighting for the freedom, they're fighting for this. I seen something on the internet that said they're fighting for God, and God is guns, oil, and drugs. They over there fighting for that. What freedom are you fighting for? You know, we're not, come on, man. And you have veterans that are like Colin Kaepernick. They're supporting him and saying we fight and we're in conflicts with other countries and nations or whatever other powers for him to have the right to do that. It's not never a thing of disrespecting the flag or disrespecting the armed forces. But if let's be real, let's be honest, let's be truthful, let's talk. If we can, you know, I don't want to go into the politics, but come on, man, it's a lot of faulty. That's what's good about Trump, I can say. He's starting to expose a lot of that stuff that's going on in there. He's starting to expose some of that. I'm not saying I support Trump. I'm not saying that. But I know that everything happens for a reason. He's in office to make some of these people that's hide behind the shadows because the president is just a figurehead. It's like a city. Who runs the city? Is it the mayor or is it the city manager? The city manager runs it. The city, he manages it. The mayor is the figurehead. That's the person we push out in the front. He's the one that's going to talk or whatnot. It's big banks and it's special interest groups that run this whole country. Here, specifically in California, the governors, the governors that are become governor of California, if you don't do correct by the CCPOA, that's the California Correctional Peace Officers Agents, agency or something. That's a real big union, all the correctional officers. California, for other states have 3 or 4 prisons. California has 34 prisons. 34. And they pretty much control the climate of the states out here.
But I always thought, you know, prison is big business.
That's another thing that we're fighting against through this agency. It's called the School to Prison Pipeline. We know, and it's you can look it up on the internet when you get a chance. We know that they have people in place right now that's identifying how many prisons to build years later by people that's in second and third grade. and they start them off in second, third grade. Problems in school, they drop, they lead them on, building paperwork against them. I just had a conference at my son's school. I have an 8-year-old, and he was 7. I said, hold on, you're saying he's having all these issues, and he's not getting to work right, you're not doing this, and you're creating all this paperwork, but you're not reaching out to the parent. When I was young, the teacher would call my mother and reach out and talk, and you're not saying nothing. You just have paperwork, paperwork, paperwork. So when I do come and say something, you got a whole case against him. Now he's in special classes. If you wanted to go that way, I'd say you can't go. Now you put him in special classes. Now you want to put him on some Ritalin. Now you want to do this. That builds him. That just gets him ready to go on to juvenile courts.
Okay, it's a whole thing, man. It's a trip.
School to prison pipeline. Google that.
It's real. Thank you for talking to me.
Really appreciate it.
That's what we do right there. Okay.
That's it for this episode of Dialogue from an American Mosaic. If you like this series, please subscribe and tell your friends. Maybe you have something to share with us on American Mosaic.